The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
This is Off Track with Hinch and Rossi.
Go ahead, Alex.
What are you eating?
Panera.
Just a solid start. Solid start. Just dogs barking. You're eating a sandwich. Alex staying silent. It's just
Hello,
we're hitting everything that we do best on this show.
Do another episode of Off Track with Hinch and Rossi. What's good, guys? What's happening? I'm eating my Panera bread. My dogs are barking. Alex is
silent.
Barely
He's
present.
Just looking at us.
And Tim's talking too much.
He almost said something, and then he just breathed out.
I think he's only said six words since we logged onto this StreamYard, and that was over a minute ago. Hi, Alex. Hi, I'm Joel. Those who don't know, I'm James Hinchcliffe, and I'm joined by my co-host, Alexander Rossi. Tim is also here. Alex, why don't you say hi to the crowd? You almost did it. You almost said a word.
He's like our teller. Right?
Yeah.
Penn and Teller, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, guys. I'm just a little distracted with my Instagram feed. So that's all.
Fair. Yeah. That's kind of how they design it. So that way you don't actually have any say in what you do with your time. You just default yourself to social media.
That is true. That is true. Hi, guys. It's hot as dick in Indiana right now.
Man, so Nashville was hot last weekend, and we just brought the hot weather up.
It is.
Indiana.
I walked the dogs an hour and a half ago, and literally like beads of sweat, like dripping down my face.
Terrible idea. I walked the dogs at like 8:30 this morning, and it was already like that. I'm like, I can't take them outside again until like 10 o'clock tonight.
Yeah, no, it's bad. But fortunately, you know, we have a race this weekend. So
guys, you know how we've like low key turned into a travel podcast?
Tim, we all want to hear your story. So we all know that there's some travel story that you had. Like, well, let's just hear it. Like, all right. Get involved.
So I booked my flights back from Nashville like an idiot. I booked a 7 a.m. return because I assumed
on the Monday
after the race, I assumed it would go like most of your guys' races. You would finish, you know, poorly. Pretty terribly, and we'd have nothing to celebrate. So I get a full night's sleep
and on time.
I mean, half of us did that.
So James really just f***s up my travel plans mm-hmm. by getting a podium. Mm-hmm. So we go out to celebrate, and the race went forever. It just ended 3 minutes ago.
It was the marathon IndyCar race.
Did you know that the Music City Grand Prix was 2 hours and 46 minutes and the Indianapolis 500 was 2 hours and 32 minutes?
Are you serious?
Yes.
Do you want to know what else was funny? Is that the average winning speed of Ray Haroon in 1911 was 74 miles an hour and the average winning speed of Marcus Ericsson was 72 miles an hour?
Well, that would have been the case without the red and yellows, I bet.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, did they calculate that with the red flags or just yellows and pits?
Just yellows.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, James, we go out, but it's a little later because the race went forever and you had to shower because, as we mentioned, Nashville is really hot. So we got a kind of a late start. And then James and Becky do the responsible thing. They go out, celebrate for a little bit and then go back to bed at a reasonable hour. I go the other way on this issue. I'm like, mm-hmm. we're at a karaoke bar. I'm going to be here until 3 a.m. And I tried to ride a bull. It didn't go well. So about 3:15, I get back to my Airbnb. I sleep for about an hour and a half and then wake up, call an Uber, get to the airport. And I'm in rough shape. I'm not looking great at any level.
Why did you bother even going to bed?
I don't know, because I'm an idiot. Have you not learned from the last bit of this story that I'm not making great decisions?
Okay. You also normally look like a guy that's been out till 4 a.m. partying on an hour and a half of sleep, but that's beside the point.
Fair. I'm not bringing great energy.
you're in a state that, like, if you ended up at a Waffle House at 7 a.m. that morning, the waitress would have looked at you and been like, you know what? This one's on the house, bud. You look like you've had a bit of a night.
you could use it. So I show up to the airport at that level and obviously pretty tired. So my solution is I'm just going to sit against the wall right where my plane boards. And so I'll sleep so that surely the motion of everybody like boarding the plane will wake me up. And that part of the plan worked perfectly. So I wake up right as the plane's boarding and I'm in my head. I'm like, God, I have to look terrible. And then part of me is like, well, maybe you don't look that bad. You're just like being self-conscious about it. And then to confirm that I look terrible, I heard somebody say, oh God, he's on our flight as I got up. So not great. Not great.
It's so good.
So I board the plane. I get to my seat. I notice that my seat has the window up, but I am asleep within 3 seconds of sitting on my chair. And so I'm in the window seat. I'm asleep before the aisle or middle seat get there. And like, this is a hard sleep. I mean, I wasn't awake to hear it, but I'm pretty sure I was snoring. About 2 hours in the flight, I wake up and I'm taking up both armrests. I'm taking up the armrest for the person in the middle, which I hate. Do that. I'm usually like such a considerate flyer, but I was just I was asleep and I was in a bad state. And like, I'm already somebody where, you know how Lucas Oil Stadium looks like somebody photoshopped a factory onto the skyline of Indianapolis and then just hasn't resized it to a proper size yet. Like, it just looks too big to be there. That's me in an airplane.
Yes, right.
That's me in an airplane seat. Like, I look too big to function in an airplane seat under the best circumstances. So when you get on a plane and you see that you're sitting next to me, like, ah, God damn it. So I'm already working from a deficit here, and I'm the worst possible roommate passenger you can have. Like, I'm accidentally elbowing the person next to me. I'm uncomfortable, so I'm fidgeting the whole time. I'm in and out of sleep. I'm sure I'm snoring. As I mentioned, I fell asleep before I even thought to put the window shade down. So 7 a.m. flight, window open. So after 4.5 hours of just being a terrible
seatmate,
we finally mercifully land in L.A. And I see the people sitting next to me get up. And noted, this is the first time I've apparently looked at them for this entire flight, because it is your title sponsor and our previous guest on the podcast, CEO of Capstone Green Energy, Darren Jameson, and his lovely wife. Now, they did look at who was sitting next to them when they boarded the flight, so they were aware it was me the whole time.
Yes, and they shared that via tweet with a very nice picture of you passed out with the window shade up on a 7 a.m. flight back to California. You jerk.
Here's the thing. They're like the loveliest couple. I hung out with them for most of the weekend. They were so nice, so welcoming. And then I returned their hospitality. I mean, he gave me the solar backpack and everything. Mm. I returned their hospitality by just being the worst possible roommate they could have ever had.
For 4 hours on an early morning flight.
Well, and he was obviously celebrating too the night before, because, you know, title sponsor of car. So, Darren, I am so sorry.
More importantly, Darren, I am so sorry. It'll never happen again, because we'll stop letting them come to races.
No, that's fair. And then, like, oh my God, his wife, like, we were hanging out Saturday before the flight and we were like talking about our kids. We were having this great conversation. I think I had to have elbowed her at least 4 times.
She's probably got bruises like on her arm from you twitching.
I don't think I can ever look these people in the eye again.
Well, my trip back was a very uneventful drive home. But Alex, how was your trip back from Nashville?
It was fine.
Okay.
Good chat.
Yeah, it was a little delayed because I had to wait for weather to pass. Thunderstorms in the summer in the Midwest. But other than that, it was uneventful. Liza slept the whole way. She had a whole row to herself in the back.
So this was your first time. This was your first time flying back from a race, right?
Yeah, it was.
Now, does that obviously like affects? You can't like go out and celebrate too hard or mourn too hard after a race if you know you have to fly the next morning, right?
That is very true. I had nothing to celebrate, so I stayed up till 1:30 in the morning watching a TV show on the couch in my bus, drowning my sorrows in Jelly Bellies and Red Vines that a guest gave us at the live show in Nashville. So a different type of celebration or
commiserating. Can we talk about how that guest showed up with all of our favorite things. Favorite jelly beans?
Very.
She went to the Jelly Belly store and picked out the top 10, made them into a bag and gave them to you. That's dedication.
Incredibly kind and thoughtful, and came in handy, quite honestly, because I had no candy or anything to satisfy my depression Sunday night. So
she also bought me a sandwich at the live show to make sure that
this is just a nice lady. She should come to most of our events.
Yeah,
yeah. I'll make sure to sit next to her on a plane.
No, you're not coming to events. You're not going to be there.
I have to drive to all events now.
Yes. Yes, you do. And people have to stop buying you tequila shots during live tapings.
Yeah, actually that one I can get behind because that was some editing.
You could just not drink them.
No, we know that I can't do that. We know that that's not an option, James.
So Tim had tequila shots while working during the live show, but I feel like he also must have had tequila shots on Sunday night because I've heard stories that Tim got up to something that was entertaining for the witnesses, but potentially embarrassing for him.
Let me explain. My favorite part of Sunday night was this. So we'd gone out to one of the country bars, listen to some music, have a drink, and Connor had a little area because he's the most connected person I know. And he had
How
a little
does he
area.
Do that, by the way, in every well, city he goes,
he's
to,
a very good
a lot of time into it.
He's a very good networker.
Yeah.
So, so he very kindly had us out. So we were there. We were having fun, and the girls were having a good time. And then Becky looks at me and she goes, "I really want to ride a mechanical bull." I'm like, "Okay, we're there. We're at that point. Okay, good to know." I'm like, well, we're in Nashville. She's never been in Nashville before. I'm like, all right, if she's going to do it, let's do it. So I go over to Tim, I'm like, hey, man, we're going to head out if you want to come with. We're going to go walk up and down Broadway until we find a place with a mechanical bull. And like, Tim didn't miss it wasn't a half beat. He's like, oh, Wild Beaver, it's half a block this way. Come on, I'll take you. They've also got live karaoke tonight.
I got to know Nashville very well, very quickly.
So he knew not only where it was, he knew the schedule of karaoke at every bar and et cetera, et cetera. And so while Becky wanted to ride a bull, Tim very much wanted to sing karaoke. So
I feel like I killed it. I did great.
Well, I did videotape all of your karaoke performances that I was present for.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Please
destroy
those.
Yeah, no. Well, because they were duets for the most part with my wife.
Thankfully, I don't think we can play these on here because we don't have the copyright to this music.
Oh, dang. Okay, well, I can show Alex this at least, which is Tim's attempt at the mechanical bull.
Oh, God. Okay, so you guys know how on a mechanical bull, like, they intentionally go harder on the guy? That was not the case with me. They had not even gotten to the point where they could go hard enough to knock me off. I fell off within potentially 2 seconds of getting on. Oh, it was barely
I'm
moved.
I'm surprised to get on.
Honest to God, I was too, and I consider that a victory.
The operator, I think, was like looking at his Instagram. He was about to reply to a text, about to start the ride, and looked up, and you were just gone. You would just
he gave me the signal like, do you want to go on again? I was like, nah, that's the best it's gonna that's as good as this is gonna get.
It's only going downhill from here, bud. Thanks, though.
Yeah. I like to call that an Alex Rossi race weekend.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. A 2021, yeah. So yeah, we've kind of done this backwards. So we've gone from our trips home to the Sunday night antics. So let's backtrack now to Sunday late evening into early evening, which was when the marathon of the IndyCar race took place. Alex, result notwithstanding, impressions of the race itself, because I've got some thoughts.
Yeah, for sure. So I loved all of it, honestly. I didn't enjoy some of the stories I heard from friends who purchased certain things, and what they ended up receiving was a little bit different. I didn't like the fact that there was no trash cans anywhere. I didn't like the fact that I guess it was $1,500 for a paddock pass, which is not really the IndyCar way of doing things. And we see ourselves as a series that, has open doors, and that's how we separate ourselves and giving access, that other people don't really.
My only caveat to that is, did they try to buy it like week of, because I kind of get the sense that, like, as it got close to the event within like the last 2 weeks, they got so short on supply of stuff and didn't want to oversell things that there's a chance things just skyrocketed in price. But I can't
think that was based on how empty the paddock was of people. I do not believe that is the case.
You thought the paddock was empty of people?
Anyways, that's besides the point. So I thought those things aside, which, you know, some of it is first year, first time doing it and all that jazz. You know, there's going to be some speed bumps along the way. I thought the event was great. I thought the track was totally fine. I thought that the fan turnout was exceptional. I think the location was as good as you're going to get in a city like that, where you're not able to, you know, shut down the main arteries, right? If you compare that to kind of what I've seen, I was never at the Vegas race, but compare it to the Vegas race.
Oh, yeah.
It was head and shoulders above that. So from all of that standpoint, the promotion leading up to it, the TV ratings, all of the good news we have on the back end of it, I thought was really, really good. I thought people drove like idiots.
Man, it was bad.
I thought the track, I don't really think you can blame the track for all the incidences that we had.
No.
At all.
No.
So, I mean, is that just the nature of having a 27 car feel?
No, I think the driving quality was really piss poor. Like really, really quite.
It was like any, it's sort of the way that IndyCar racing is evolved in a, like, it's a negative twist on a positive thing, or the other way around, but you have such a competitive series at the moment. And because everyone's so close, overtaking is genuinely pretty difficult anywhere that we go. And so people are trying to make things happen in places where things shouldn't be happening necessarily. And I think especially at a new track, you know, you go around in practice, and I think the only places anybody made any passes in practice were like into turn 9 or into turn 4. And when the race came around, I think everyone was trying to be the guy that figured out that other passing opportunity that nobody really thought about in practice and was going to try to make that work. And it just did not happen. You know, for me, the big one was the way the restarts are structured. Obviously we kind of mid-Ohio'd it, right? So the race start was down the back straight into turn 9, but all the restarts were along the front straight into turn 1. And the way the IndyCar rule reads, when the green flag flies, you can race, you can pass, you can do whatever you want. And on a restart, with the front straight being relatively short, the start finish line, you know, obviously being halfway between the exit of the last corner and the entry to the first corner, the leader's barely out of the last corner when the green flag flies, which means everybody behind him is still stacked up and entering the last corner. So guys are getting cute, trying to make passes into the last corner. That's what caused the traffic jam that caused the first red there. And, you know,
let me just interrupt. We are one of the very few series where you can race at green. A lot of other series.
You can pass before the line.
Right. You have to wait until the line and then you can go racing. So right. Just throwing that in there. Yep.
No, very valid point, because there's one other track in particular where this has been an issue, and that's Long Beach, right? Because you come out of the hairpin there and the green flag waves the leader, and the guy in 10th dive bombs the guy in 9th into the hairpin, hits him into a spin, blocks the track, and ruins everybody's day. So, you know, even when we were sat there during the red, I was on the radio with my crew saying, like, I am the race director, and tell them to put a broadcast out saying, you know, gentleman's agreement, rule change, no passing until the start finish line on restarts, because this was just going to keep happening. And they did not do that, but that is something I would highly recommend for going back to that place.
Yeah. So, again, I think I don't even want to say, I don't know. I don't know if it was the summer break. Everyone's amped up for the second half of the season. There's people that, you know, are in contract years. There's people that are fighting for a championship. I don't know. I just thought that it was bad. It was bad in a lot of respects. Be that as it may, it still fascinates me, IndyCar racing, that a guy that sails through the air for 35 feet and makes 7 pit stops, including a drive-through penalty, wins the race. Like, it's equally amazing as it is mind-numbingly painful.
Frustrating, yeah.
To try and understand how that is like, how is that sport? I mean, well, it's cool, I guess, but it's also ridiculous.
I'll say it's because we had 47 laps of yellow, you know, like if we hadn't had 8 caution periods or whatever it was, somebody could not have done that, you know, but I know, but
it's not just because of that. It's because these rules that we have allow that to be even an option. And I just don't think, like, yeah, Marcus,
which rule? What do you mean?
The pits being closed and all that. So I think I don't want to take away from Marcus. He had speed all weekend. Once he got out in front, I haven't watched the race, but he was handling pressure from by far the fastest car on track very well. But with that being said, I don't think he wasn't the deserving winner. Scott, who started second and finished second, probably should have won that race. He's the only one that ultimately kept his nose clean, right? He had good pace all weekend. And for him, it must be very frustrating to watch his teammate who crashes through his own fault, gets a penalty and 7 pit stops, and then goes on to beat him. Like, it's just, it's weird. It is what it is.
Yeah. It's an interesting dynamic. That is true.
It's interesting to me because you'll watch a race a lot of times and like a small thing will happen to a car and you're like, well, that's their race. They just went from like contention for top 5 to now, for like sure, they're fighting for 17th place. Right. Yeah. And then except when it's not.
Right.
it's kind of funny. Like we always have talked about in the past of Scott having, like, you know, Scott's going to get a puncture on lap 1, which is going to put him on the right strategy and he's going to end up winning the race or whatever. I feel like that has trickled to the 8 car this year. Like, nowhere in Detroit, cycles kind of to second, and then Will's car doesn't restart in pit lane, doesn't qualify very well in Nashville, drives over the back of the car, and then somehow cycles to the front and wins in Nashville. It's just crazy. But
it's funny because I think this year, more than in years past, and I mean, I might have to look back and like really think back, because I haven't been as much in the thick of the battles up front as in years past, but it seems like the closed pits during yellow has actually caught off fewer people this year than we've had in years past. It's not been quite as detrimental to as many guys' races, I think, as what we've seen. You know, like we went through a phase through like the 2012 to 2014-2015 kind of phase where that was happening a lot. And like, Will was the guy that literally, he's lost more races because of that rule than probably anybody in history, because he's so good at qualifying on pole. He would run up front, he would save fuel, and he would extend his first stint and be pulling a gap. And then during the pit sequence, somebody would nose it in the wall, and then he'd be cycled to the middle and you'd be screwed. We were joking about it at Nashville before the race, actually, when he told me that. He was like, yeah, I haven't been qualifying as well lately, but my races have been better because I don't get caught out by stuff like that anymore. But yeah, no, it is interesting. I mean, I don't know what the right answer is. I don't know what the right, because I do feel like it's happening less. I feel like race control has been better about like leaving the track green if the yellow situation's not like a super urgent one, if it's around the pit window so guys can get through. And I think they've done a good job of helping that.
I guess I'm not, I don't disagree with that. I find it so strange that in a non-endurance form of motorsports, that what happened on Sunday is possible. That's all. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's like, if for a fan watching that, they would have been like, what on earth is happening?
Well, can you imagine if this was somebody's first IndyCar race?
Like Marcus admitted, he doesn't even understand how it happened. He just kept pitting and cycling up towards the front. And he was like,
pit lane was actually shorter than the racetrack. So it was faster to drive through pit lane than it was to go through the racetrack.
Yeah, that's how Colton almost beat the pace car out.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, that's why he pitted six times, is he took six shortcuts. He just kept shortcutting the track.
The
pit speed lane was the average track speed.
Yeah. It's that shortcut in Mario Kart on the beat.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's through the tunnel, off the jump, through the waterfall. Yeah.
We're through the ocean, whatever.
I always like the sandbar one. Yeah. All right. Well, James.
Yeah, Ty's got to be out for that, though.
James, you had a really good race.
Yeah, we did. I mean, you know, obviously the Andretti cars were really quick. I mean, Colton and Alex on the front row there. And, you know, Ryan and I, well, I think I was 10th. Ryan was 14th. Honestly, we could have been higher in qualifying too. We had a red come out on what would have been a fast lap. Like, the car was really good. Learning a new track's always fun. It's always cool when you can like come to a new place and at the end of a session, you know, you're going through the data with your engineer and you find as much stuff in yourself as you do in the car, like massive chunks of time you're still finding in yourself and you're driving and as the track evolves. And one of the huge benefits of having, I mean, this weekend, essentially six cars on the team with both shank entries. It was good. We kind of went with a alternate strategy early and then we thought it sort of bit us and we were getting shot in the foot with that traffic jam pile up in turn 11 there on that restart. And I thought, you know, because there was obviously a lot of narrow parts of that racetrack and we talked about it beforehand, right? Like if a car gets spun around here or a guy hits the wall here, like we're going to block the track and have a stoppage, right? And so that happened in turn 11. And I remember sitting there thinking to myself, this is the worst for me in this moment. This is the worst place for this to happen because the pace car can just take the whole field through the pit lane, avoid the accident, and they could keep cycling under yellow. And we're going to be four laps down by the time this all gets sorted. Race control made the call to call the red right away. And that's essentially what saved my race because we should have been laps down ultimately. Now, we weren't involved in the accident. I didn't hit anybody. Nobody hit me. The track was blocked. I had nowhere to go. So it would have been crappy to get penalized for that essentially. But yeah, we managed to come back from that and the guys made a great call in one of the cautions to pit and kind of roll the dice on more cautions coming and stretch the fuel out. And it played out that way. And, you know, unfortunately Alex and Colton had their issues, but you know, had a solid top five going and turned into a podium, which was, you know, nice to be up there, but I think we could have had like 400 cars in the top six, which would have been pretty cool.
Well, congratulations, man. It was good to see you back up there again. One thing I did notice after this race, and I wanted to get your guys' opinion on it, or Alex, did you want to recap yours or did you just want to skip that?
It was fine.
Okay. One thing I noticed is it seemed like a lot of the drivers were more free with their criticism after this race than they usually are. And I don't mean like driver on driver stuff, because I mean, you had Bourdais saying,
I saw anything.
Well, I saw Dixon had talked about how he thinks IndyCar needs to have more equitable penalties and standards for stuff. I saw Scott McLaughlin posted the video of getting passed under yellow and things like that. And it just, I don't know, it seemed like people were, and then Bourdais saying douche on NBC Sports Network was hilarious. It just seemed like the drivers felt a lot more free with the criticism after. Is that just me reading too much into it?
No, I think you had a race where a lot of people felt wronged. And so I think any one of those people would have said the same things if that same incident had befell them somewhere else. It's just a lot of guys in one night had something work against them. I mean, Scott's point about the red flag rules and the penalties and things like that, it's a valid point, right? What has to be remembered is Ray's control's job is not easy in those situations. There's a lot going on, and we keep adding cars to the series, and that keeps making it more and more complicated. So having some sense of, when a red flag gets thrown versus not, I think is important. If it's kind of left up to decided as it comes, discretionary call, that starts getting a bit tough with, you know, certain situations, and someone's always going to feel wronged or slighted in that situation. Having black and white rules for that, though, is very difficult because racing's weird and weird stuff happens, and trying to predict and plan for every eventuality is it's just an insurmountable challenge. So I think there's definitely things we can look at and try to maybe alter and adjust so that way we have less variability in some of those calls. But I don't think you're ever going to make it perfect because, again, it's a really tough thing what they do. It's a very tough thing.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, you put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor, because you know the bigger the fight, the better the reward. Medela, the mark of the fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Well, and good news, this was the most watched IndyCar race on cable since they said like 1998. Everybody had talked about maybe there'd be some fall off in the momentum that IndyCars had with the break, and that didn't seem to be the case. And now you're going into a doubleheader with NASCAR. I mean, what are you guys' thoughts on that?
I think it's amazing. I think it's it was a big relief to kind of see those numbers, especially after some of the messages I got after the race. People were not too impressed with how much, you know, caution and red flag running there was and such. But, you know, I think the draw of a new event is always exciting for people. And ultimately, like I said at the beginning, like Nashville is a great backdrop. So it's very exciting for the series. It's a great boost, one that we needed, especially coming out of a 3-week break. And as we go into the final part of the season here.
But you know what I love about it is that it totally dispels this myth that if we disappear for a couple weeks, people forget about us. Like, I've always thought that was such a crock, and like the whole argument for going to Detroit the week after the 500 is we got to keep the momentum up. It's like literally nobody cares. Like that's not going to make more people tune into Detroit because the 500 was 1 week before instead of 2 weeks before. If you have a good series and you have good racing and you have people that care about your sport, they're going to tune in even if you've been gone for a month. Like F1 does a 3-week break every year and they're doing just fine. You know, it's and luckily this year we didn't have Detroit right after Indy. We actually had a weekend off after Indy, which I think is so important for the well-being of everybody that works in IndyCar, teams, series officials, track people, whatever, drivers, doesn't matter. Yeah. I hope that that's something that we hang on to and that this is another good data point for that, because it doesn't matter, right? that race drew a lot of attention because it was new. The bridge, you know, everybody wanted to see who was going to be the first driver to end up in the water. And so there was, you know, a little extra impetus to tune in. But I also just think that, you know, being down for a couple weeks, it does not make people forget about the sport. So yeah. I was really glad to see the numbers. I felt really bad for all the people working the TV side of things, because to fill that amount of dead air when we are in yellow flags and red flags is not easy. And we gave them a lot to talk about, whether it was cleaning up crashed cars or cleaning up the like oil spill, the waterfall, Niagara Falls coming out of turn three there. Do we ever figure out what that was?
It was a leak, like the water system from one of the suites.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Like it was a city water supply line or something.
Thank God that happened under caution.
That would have been a huge shock.
It was like somebody who just would have been the unlucky car, would have been me, would have been the unlucky car to just go through there full speed under green when like the water just came seeping through under the wall and I just been cranking the wall of the exit of three. But
yeah, but the bright side is then you would have won.
Probably.
By that race's logic, potentially true.
The second half of the race, I mean, I know there were a lot of wrecks and stuff in the first half, but the second half was so entertaining. The like Colton charging through the field, there was just a lot of on-track action. And then like the question on what to do with the pits with the 35 laps left and whether to get fuel or if you could make it on caution. And Alex, you didn't take tires, right? Because it was like you'd only been on 4 laps of green on tires. Like that part I thought was really entertaining and really fun to watch.
Dude, Dixon.
I don't know that I remember. I was Dixon, in 17, so I stopped caring.
Before you were in
50 17. Laps on a set of tires.
Which was only 3 green, right?
That's true. but no.
So wait, they just pitted for fuel?
Yeah.
What is the point of that?
I don't know.
They said that
track position was so important that they'd only done 4 laps on those tires, so they would rather not waste the time in pit lane to get better track position than get fresh
tires. So it was 4 green laps and then probably like 12 yellow laps or whatever. So he only actually really did that makes sense. We
For
didn't
some
do
reason,
50
I
green laps
did the
whole
same.
Race, so.
I thought you did the same thing, Alex. Maybe I just misheard and it was Dixon.
No, I pitted for a splash because we were already in the back, so we figured why not top up, but that was a different strategy. So
funny story that's not funny for everyone involved here. Under whatever caution it was, and Pato came in for a stop, and he came out like side by side with me. And I was on the radio. I was like, there's no way he beat me to the line. Because, you know, turn one, you had to slow down so much, whatever. But so I was like, we were one to go. And I was on the radio. I was like, Pato came out. Like, we came out side by side. There's no way he crossed the pit commit line before me or whatever, the pit exit line. And we were having this whole debate back and forth, trying to get up to race control, whatever, whatever, to move him back behind me. And they're like, sorry, man, like, we're just not getting anything back from race control. It is what it is. We're green this time by. Let's just focus. So I was kind of like, pissed off, and then we go green and 4 corners later.
Oh no.
I was like, oh.
Sorry,
I guess
Alex.
Sorry, friend. I tried. I mean I tried to move behind me.
What's so upsetting is like we were like when that happened, I was behind Marcus, like on his strategy, and like had a look in turn 4, but I was like, no, like it's just not.
It's not necessary.
We're faster than him. It's not worth it. It's fine. And then I just get blindsided. And I was like, oh, cool. But guys, I've gotten really good at finding reverse lately. Like, here's the thing. In St. Pete, when I had the issue with Graham and my puncture and we both ended up in the wall, it took me like 30 seconds to find reverse. But since then, I have had to back down pit lane at Laguna Seca during a test. Mm-hmm. I have had to use reverse in the runoff in turn 10 at Nashville. And then, so by the time I got to ending up in the wall in turn 4 in the race, like I was in reverse in like literally 8 seconds. It was pretty cool. Like out of the wall, backwards in first gear again going. I was pretty impressed with myself.
It's good. It's good practice. It's a good thing to know how to do quickly.
It is.
I practice in the sim sometimes.
I wasn't able to get to reverse for turn 10 in practice though.
Well, you were still going pretty fast forward. So it would have been worse actually if you'd found reverse in that moment.
Probably. Yeah.
I was impressed with how quickly you got into pit lane, because Brian Barnhart's on my radio and he's like, "Oh, driver's right, turn 10, yellow flag, watch out for a car on the wall." And I come around and there's no car. I'm like, "Brian, what are you talking about? There's nothing there."
I didn't want to mess up everyone's laps, man. I was just trying to do the good thing.
Yeah. Very, very considerate. Yeah. Very considerate.
He had lunch on Broadway and he just didn't want to be late.
Yeah, the session was already running late and everything. So yeah.
Well, you guys got to share the track this weekend. You're back in Indianapolis. We're a little over on time, but anything we should look out for this week?
I mean, I just think I love that we're doing this again. You know, having NASCAR and IndyCar together happened last year as a first. You know, a lot of things obviously were different last year with schedules, but the fact that they held on to this idea and are letting us do it again, and now the Cup guys are actually running on the road course, not the oval, it's going to be awesome. Based on the Xfinity race last year on the road course, I think it's going to be massively entertaining on Sunday. I really hope that we put on a good show for everybody on Saturday. It's going to be hotter than Hades. Drink lots of stuff. But yeah, I'm excited. Do you know
what lap distance the race is?
Like, I don't know, like 100?
Well, no, but like, is it 75, 80, 90? Because like,
I actually have this handy. It is, 85.
Well, it's going to be fun. I wish I could be there.
Well, we don't wish that you were here, and I can guarantee you that most I'm people super on American Airlines.
Darren Jamison, don't worry.
Most people on American Airlines are happy that you're not there. And yeah, hopefully we have two positive things to talk about next week, guys.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Exactly right.
Highly unlikely, but it'd be cool.
Statistically speaking, Not great chances, but we'll try.
Cautiously pessimistic.
Thanks so much for listening to Off Track with Hinch and Rossi. Keep in contact with us on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is @AskOffTrack. Or you can follow us individually. We're @Hinchtown and @AlexanderRossi. If you want to follow Thim, though we have no idea why you would, he's @TheTimDurham. We really need to get that changed to @ProducerThim. The music you heard today is by Ryan Dan of Holland Patton Public Library. Off Track with Hinch and Rossi is produced by Tim Durham. And by that I mean Thim.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.